News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. Tuesday morning, kind of a change weather-wise. We've got a front coming through. It's not raising a bunch of commotion as it does, but it will leave us drier in the end and very pleasant for most of this week. The humidity back up for the weekend, but for the most part, it looks like we are going to be largely across our area rain-free.
Yeah,
and for the next nearly week.
Should be cool tonight and then even cooler tomorrow night. Yeah. So looking forward to that.
Tuesday means it's the day that we talk with Quinn Hillier from the Washington Examiner and QuinnHillier.com, and we do that now. Quinn, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys.
So, Quinn, let's lead off with an American patriot that passed over the weekend, and that's former Senator Orrin Hatch. Age of 88, he passed away Saturday, was the longest-serving Republican senator in the history of the U.S. Senate.
Wow.
Went from the obituary I'm reading here says 77 to 2019.
Yeah, he got elected in 76, took office in January of 77. And I am old enough to remember it when he first got in. And those of us who were Ronald Reagan fans back then were bummed out that Reagan had lost the Republican nomination, and of course it was 2 years after Watergate where Republicans were at a low ebb, and then even Gerald Ford trying for re-election made a great comeback and then declared Poland a free country and embarrassed himself and lost to Jimmy Carter. And there was basically only one bright light in that election, and that was this young conservative lawyer in Utah named Orrin Hatch had won an upset victory to get into the Senate.
Right. 1976.
He was a breath of fresh air right then, back in 1976-77. And for 42 years, he pretty much lived up to the billing. I guess the point I want to make is people, I think, don't recognize the good that a lot of senators and congressmen do, because in the end, there's 535 members of Congress spread out over a bunch of years. There's all this legislative back and forth, and it's so much easier to concentrate on a president. But people like Orrin Hatch made a very big difference, very much for the better, for the United States, and I can go on and on detailing why. But this man was a patriot. He was a gentleman. He was civil. He was hardworking. He was conservative. He was just about everything that I want in a senator, and everything most conservatives want. And in a lot of ways, because he worked across the aisle, he was everything any American would want, even if you disagreed with him.
Talk about some of the highlights during that span, and that is a long span. 76 elected, 2019 out of office, retires from office. But that is, it's mind blowing. Everything that happened in the world and in the nation during that time. He was in the Senate for a lot of stuff. What did he champion through?
Yeah, and not only was he in the Senate, but he was always in the middle of the biggest issues, and so he was a leader in the Senate. He wasn't a backbencher. Look, for conservatives, the biggest thing he did is he was the point man on confirming conservative justices, and especially for those of us who think Clarence Thomas is like the greatest justice of our lifetimes. Clarence Thomas would not be on the Supreme Court if Orrin Hatch hadn't gone in and saved his nomination. There is no doubt about it. Orrin Hatch saved that nomination, and we have had 30 years of a great justice of the Supreme Court because of Orrin Hatch. But Hatch also pushed for a lot of other good conservative judges. Look, do you like being able to go to the drugstore and get inexpensive generic drugs rather than having to pay brand name prices for every drug? All those things on the shelves that you don't have to get prescriptions for that are generics, you can thank Orrin Hatch for that. Before 1984, there weren't many generic drugs because the patent protections for the name brands were so strong and the rules were so tight that only things that were really easy to mass produce cheaply, like aspirin, could go the generic route. Orrin Hatch and very liberal, usually bad guy, Henry Waxman, banded together and fixed that problem and basically, out of thin air, created a thriving generic drug industry. That's thanks to Orrin Hatch. For good or for bad, mostly for good, the Americans for Disability Act. Mm-hmm. Hatch was one of the two top Republicans on that, along with Bob Dole. You know, all sorts of health care-related things where free market innovation was allowed to help the health care market and help help the development of new drugs that save lives or that save pain. Again and again, that was Orrin Hatch. So, you know, I could go on, but everywhere that was the intersection of complicated law and free market policy, Orrin Hatch was there.
Very interesting. And 88 years old, passed away.
And a wonderful man. A wonderful, truly a wonderful human being, too. Just nice to everybody.
And as you went through some of his accomplishments, it certainly sounds that way. Now, to bring it back home a little bit, you've been quoted in quite a few stories over the last couple weeks, other than the ones you're writing and publishing on the internet. But John Sharp with AL.com was on yesterday with Sean Sullivan to discuss his most recent work. And you were quoted in that work as he talks about the gubernatorial election. Of course, Governor Kay Ivey looking for re-election and looking strong in the polling. The only question is whether or not she avoids a runoff at this point. But as you hear the ads running here on this station and on TV, and John wrote about this, there's a very heavy focus on national issues and not so much on state issues. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, and it's either national issues or non-issues that they're talking about. I mean, they're talking about fluff. They're trying to see who can out-folksy each other. And when they do talk issues, again, it's purely national stuff that has little or oftentimes no bearing on state government. And it's embarrassing. It's an insult to Alabama voters, except Alabama voters seem ready to embrace it, and that shouldn't be something we do. Look, there are so many issues in state government that desperately need reform, and the only one that's even, you know, slightly talking about them is Lou Burdette,
right,
who was actually quoted in that article at a forum getting exasperated and saying, doesn't anybody actually want to talk about things that state government does? And so more power to Lou Burdette for at least trying to talk about state issues. These other people talking about who can shoot the best gun and talking about who can, you know, nothing too high for a high stepper or whatever the heck it is. Give me a break.
You know, a lot of good has done Lou Burdette, who I think right now is fifth.
Yeah,
in
he's
the polling.
Well, yeah, but look, I'm not endorsing anybody, but just as an observer, he's building quite a ground game. He's got long way to make up, but he's got a lot of grassroots ground game support, and all he needs to do, all anybody needs to do, is finish second if they keep Ivy below 50, and Ivy's running right about at the 50%, so it'll be give or take 1 or 2 points.
And Burdette, obviously, Burdette at a obvious disadvantage cash wise. You look at how much money's been brought in by the top three candidates, Ivy, James, and Blanchard, and a lot of that their own money that's injected into the campaign. But you mentioned it there, and I think that's the big question, right? Are they running these campaigns in that style because they're told to, and that's just what their advisors think will catch on? Or, you know, is it true that Alabamians are voting on who's the most Trumpy? Because, honestly, I mean, our listeners, you look at the text line, and they don't, first off, they don't like being told who to vote for. Even if they are Trump fans, they don't care for Trump telling them who to vote for. They're going to make up their own mind. And I just think that these candidates and their campaign managers assume one thing when it's not necessarily true. If you had one of these top three candidates, and they're trying with the education thing, but if they really brought into focus more, you know, what's happening in the state. If you had Tim James or Lindy Blanchard talking about the bridge down here every other spot, you don't think that they would maybe get a boost in the polls? I don't understand why they're hitting these national issues, because I honestly think the Alabama voters are smarter than that.
Well, I think Alabama voters are smarter than that, but Alabama voters need to prove you and I wrong. Because right now, the indications from the last several election cycles are that this kind of sort of symbolic politicking, you know, works rather than talking about real issues. And look, nobody's saying that voters are going to pay attention to the granular details of a 27-point plan, but at least talk. I mean, look, I can run down issues that desperately need attention. Number one, the state criminal justice system is broken. Even when the state the state government for the first time in years is awash in money, we have a state crime lab, a forensics lab, that's what, a year to a year and a half behind the curve. It takes a year to a year and a half to get most forensics evidence back. That slows down the court system. It means because of other laws on the books that we have to put people out on bail who shouldn't be back out on the street because they can't bring them to trial yet, and they can only be held for so long behind bars without a conviction. So right there is a huge problem. We don't have enough state police. We don't have the state crime lab. We don't have enough judges, especially here in Mobile County.
Right.
And that involves state funding. We're not talking about that. And every single candidate who knows that one of the biggest issues today for every voter is crime, every candidate should be talking about how to fix the state criminal justice system in order to reduce this crime rate.
Yeah, I love Dalton's idea, by the way. He could be a political consultant. If these candidates were to regionalize their commercials, talk about one issue on Birmingham radio, talk about another issue that more affects Mobile, like the bridge, Dalton, you're on to something.
That and what Quinn said is spot on. I mean, how many mornings have we gotten on here? Every morning. And we talk about the crime in Mobile. Crime's gone up in Mobile. It's gone up in Montgomery. It's gone up in Birmingham. It's, no pun intended. It's criminal that they're not touching that.
Yeah.
It's criminal they're not touching that. And I don't know when we have to go to break, but I can go down about four other issues that
Let's do that after the break here. We're going to take a little break right now. Quinn Hillier, more on statewide issues that probably we should look more closely at, and maybe even in the midst of these campaigns for U.S. Senate and for governor, we should definitely be asking our candidates what they think about them. It's 19 minutes after 8 o'clock. If you want to text, feel free, 251-343-0106. Writer and observer, even a novelist as well, Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com and The Washington Examiner. It's on with Dan and Dalton in Mobile Mornings this morning. The Matt Jones Trilogy, Quinn, your time to let everybody know about that.
It's satire and modern media politics and religion, available at Amazon.com. It's a lot of fun, and it basically takes place here in Mobile.
Nice. Okay.
So we were talking about the state issues that Governor Ivey and the rest of her competitors in the gubernatorial race should be focused on, rather than, you know, nationwide issues like the border and COVID. I mean, obviously those are important issues, but that shouldn't be the main focus. And earlier you said, you know, number one, they should be talking about criminal justice reform, the prisons, and how violent criminals are being let out to commit more violent crimes. You said you had a few other statewide issues, more localized, that they should be focused on right now.
Yeah, well, look, I think I actually saw an ad where Kay Ivey calls herself the education governor. Well, not very good when we're literally dead last in math in the country and like 48th in English. And she's trying to take credit for this massive math reform bill that the legislature just passed. Problem is, they just passed it. She's, what, 6 years into her term, and B, it's not a good bill. And I could go into all kinds of reasons why it's actually, it does some good things, but it's more counterproductive than not. Look, the state mental health system is terrible. They centralized, the state hospitals in supposedly better facilities, but what that means is they closed down Searcy down here, so they don't have enough mental health care near the communities where people live. Now, the state government did increase funding for mental health this last year, but meanwhile, the whole system, it's a very complicated system, and it's basically a racket. They need to fix that. You've talked about the bridge, which, by the way, it was put on hold for 2 years because Kay Ivey had a conniption fit and set us back 2 years. The University of Alabama, all the feather nesting they're doing that Lenyap has reported on.
Right.
Millions of dollars that literally could be going into better education instead going to fluff and to feather nesting, that makes a difference. Or if you don't spend that $1 million on higher ed, take $6 million and put it into the state forensics crime lab, for goodness sake, so that they can catch up their year and a half backlog. I mean, things are interconnected that way. Funds are fungible, and when you're wasting money on one thing, you're setting something else important behind, and nobody's talking about these things.
So, Quinn, let's, a quick, sort of prediction. If Ivy does not win going away, if she does have a runoff against either Tim James or Lindy Blanchard or Dean Odle, somehow sneaks in there.
Or Lou Burdett.
Or Lou Burdett, if he works his way in, which that would be, quite the upset. What do you think the odds are that, someone puts up a good fight in a runoff?
I think the odds are reasonable. The odds are she's going to get slightly over 50%. Not a lot over, but slightly, and she'll be the nominee. But once somebody has been shown to be vulnerable, if she doesn't win right off in the first primary, then it's a whole new ball game. And rather than one big, queen and everybody else just sort of peons trying to vie for attention, once you're one-on-one, it's a lot tougher. I still say she's the favorite, especially since the others haven't particularly distinguished themselves, but it is not a done deal.
Quinn, in 30 seconds, how do you see the Senate race at this point?
Who knows whether Mike Durant's being hurt by a backlash against him not debating and not taking questions. But right now, he's looking like a slight leader over Katie Britt with Mo Brooks pulling up third.
Hmm. And then in a runoff, say it's a Durant and Britt runoff, is Britt able to make up the difference the second time around?
Oh, it's a 50-50 game. And okay. It's anybody's game, and there's no way that I'd predict who will win. Other than that, it could very well be close.
We appreciate your time on a Tuesday. As always, Quinn, thanks a bunch.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Quinn Hillier, QuinnHillier.com and Washington Examiner, and quite a bit of talk there about the gubernatorial race. We spent a lot of time talking about the Senate race, and we're now 28 days from those primaries. Reminder, if you've moved or had any other major changes, you need to fix yourself on the voter rolls. That's what I did yesterday. I logged on, gave them my new address, make sure that I'm ready to roll once
okay.
we're in primary.
I got my polling place in the mail the other day, instructing me where to go. So they did it for me. 8:30 at FM Talk 106.5.
Thanks, Kane. 8:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Turning up your voice, 251-343-0106. That works for the phone and for the text line, and we'll get to those texts here in just a minute. This segment brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They're online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. And Trey Bennett and his crew doing amazing work on both sides of the bay. They make junk disappear. All you have to do is point. And you can get a quote today. The pricing is up front. So what they quote you is what you'll end up paying. They don't, you know, put surprise charges in after the fact. And they'll come to your place of business. They'll come to your house, wherever you need them. They'll come and take that junk away. And this is the time of the year where people really focus in on how their home looks.
No doubt.
Making the yard ready for summer and spending more time out in the yard this spring. You want to make sure that you have plenty of room. And after cleaning up over the winter, you have a bunch of junk for them to come and take away. And, you know, everyone here at FM Talk 106.5, for the most part, have used Trey and 1-800-GOT-JUNK services, and everyone has glowing reviews. Actually, I have a stack here of reviews from customers all across the area who have used 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and so many with glowing reviews. So set your appointment up today. If you need junk gone, and you need it gone soon, call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or go online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
These numbers seem to change every day, but what I'm looking at right now is that the United States has, Ukraine has received nearly $900 million in donations since Putin invaded the country in last February.
Donations. So from like citizens, like people volunteering their money up, I guess, because there's been a lot more than that given out.
Yeah, I'm wondering about all that. That's not what I was looking for. That's just donations. The United States, as far as the United States giving Ukraine goods and the ability to you know, weaponry and everything like that and defense missiles, that's been over a billion.
Oh yeah, we're at as of yesterday we were at 2.4 billion.
Two point four billion. In fact, from 2014. We have provided more than $6.1 billion in security assistance and training and equipment for Ukraine. That's from the skirmish in 2014 that in large measure hasn't even ended yet, right?
Right. And then another $400 million announced yesterday. So, I mean, it's adding up. And
there was $800 million, then $400 million. And now Ukraine comes up with this idea. And again, all the props in the world to their army and the grit and the execution of what they've done in the war in their homeland so far. But this seemed like a big ask. A top Ukrainian official says the country is asking the Biden administration to provide at least $2 billion per month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this going to go on through the summer or through the war? I don't know. Here's the way it's worded. They want $3 billion from the EU and $2 billion from the U.S., monthly. Now, I saw somewhere that's an amazing bill, isn't it?
It's huge, yeah.
Appearing in Washington for meetings with the senior U.S. officials, Ukrainian finance minister said that the country is seeking a total of at least $5 billion per month in international assistance, about $2 billion from America to cover the country's immediate needs for April, May, and June. Beyond these billions in aid, an additional longer-term request is expected in the future to help Ukraine recover from what is estimated to be far greater damage from the war. The request from the Ukrainians comes as lawmakers return to Washington facing a crunch of new spending fights. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told reporters on Thursday that the administration is working on sending Congress an additional request for aid to Ukraine, but she declined to say how much. Out of the blue, this sounds like Ukraine is the International Pritchard Water Board. It's like, wait a minute, $2 billion per month?
Yeah, I mean,
in cash.
It's and you know, it's going to take a lot of money to rebuild, obviously, if you've seen the devastation. But it's crazy to me. And it you said it there. It's so odd that every time you get into a discussion like this, that there has to almost be a disclaimer, like, hey, we like the Ukrainian mm-hmm. people, but, and really, I think the victim in all of this is, of course, the citizenry. Well, first off, the citizens of Ukraine who did not ask for this. Also, the citizens of Russia, you know, didn't necessarily ask for this. This is a war being fought by the leadership in Russia. And you know, of course, there are supporters of the regime over there because so much of their propaganda is put out that way. But to pretend there isn't propaganda on both sides, it's disconcerting to me in many ways that just because the U.S. has, and people have decided the U.S. needs Ukraine to win this war, that even mentioning other aspects of this will get you into trouble mm-hmm. with the PC police, really. Mm-hmm. It's really like the PC police jump from topic to topic to topic, and anyone who goes against what they have to say is a Nazi or a Putin sympathizer or a racist. You know, they go to the same well over and over and over again. But how has there not been more of a discussion about, you know, the history of Ukraine, and not even, you know, going back? I know their history goes back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and I'm not somebody who has had a close eye on Ukraine forever. I'll admit, just like so many other people, that I really didn't pay as much attention until this invasion began. But you have people who really didn't pay any attention at all who are now acting like they're experts on the entire situation, and that Ukraine is 100% good all the time, when Zelensky, for his part, you know, he's doing a great job rallying, and but, you know, the man was in the Panama Papers mm-hmm. with people who were illegally storing their, you know, their funds offshores in order to avoid taxes. And the corruption in Ukraine has been well known for a very long time. And while there have been forces of good trying to right that ship and make it a productive democracy, what was the huge talk during the entire Trump presidency was, what was the Biden's role mm-hmm. in Ukraine? Why was Hunter Biden getting paid all this money by a Ukrainian oligarch? And what was the real aim of having the vice president's son on their payroll, where he admitted that he was paying off his dad? You know, there are so many questions that need to be asked, and I don't think it's just specifically Democrats in the U.S. I think there are Republicans involved here too, but Ukraine has been used for many purposes, and very, very rarely has it been used for the good of the Ukrainian people, and we're just supposed to go along with this whole thing. I obviously think Putin's bad. I don't think it's good to, you know, bomb these innocent civilians and do what they're doing, but to just completely sign over everything to Ukraine when whose hands are these weapons going to fall into? What will this mean as far as escalation towards an even more dangerous war? There's a lot of questions not being asked because people are scared to ask them.
Before Russia put their troops on the border, which prompted all this, did they do that as early as November, somewhere around there? Before they did that, when you said the word Ukraine, the country Ukraine, the first thing, and, you know, I'm admitting here, there's a lot of you that probably a lot more educated on Ukraine, but the first thing that I thought about, or the word I would associate with that country, was corruption.
Yeah.
The second term that I would, so just me, associating with that country was human trafficking. It's like, so that those were almost the sponsors of the country before I knew much about it, before Russia did what it's doing there, which is horrible. But it's been a very flawed country for a long time now. They, you know, yes, it's a democratic society. Yes, Zelensky's been very brave, and the people as well. But to walk into the White House 2 months into this war and say, all right, here's the deal. We need $2 billion a month.
Yeah.
From you, and $3 billion from you. To me, that is a startling request by a country that we're trying to help every way we can. And they were even talking about some of that money would go to pensions that people...
Wow.
Like, we have to take care of your pension program? I don't know that that's where we should be right now.
And you know, to Zelensky's credit, there were a lot of promises made. You know, American after American would go to Ukraine and say, listen, we're going to protect you from big bad Russia. We just need you to do this, or we need you to do that. And once it came time to, you know, write that check, we're literally writing checks, but there's not a whole lot of protection going on outside of the weaponry that we're giving to them, because they know that if we move American troops in there, then as close as we are teetering right now to actual war with Russia, even though we've been fighting proxy wars for mm-hmm. a long time, that if American troops start shooting down Russian jets or vice versa, then it is officially on. And they, I don't think, maybe they do, but I don't think the leadership wants that. So instead, we're just signing billions and billions over to Ukraine. And, you know, Ukraine is in, they are in a terrific spot for a country. but a terrible spot for them because they just don't have the, and they've never had the ability to defend themselves, whether it's from the East or from the West. They've been right in the middle of that tug of war forever. And it's sometimes it goes Soviets' way, Russia now. Sometimes it goes the other way with Germany or France. And they've just been stuck in the middle for so long. There has been, to act like the U.S. hasn't installed leadership in countries because they want that country to act in the, in favor of the U.S.
Yeah.
They've done it year after year. And, you know, that's just how diplomacy works sometimes. But to gloss over it, like it isn't a major part of the reason that Russia's there now, is to ignore history. And, there are Russian candidates. I mean, there are candidates that America wants to see running Ukraine, and there are candidates that Putin wants to see running Ukraine. And it all has kind of culminated into this invasion.
The ties between U.S. and Ukrainian economic officials have deepened over the course of the war. The Ukrainian official asking for the money attended a private dinner hosted by Deputy Treasury Secretary Wally Adeyemo on Thursday, which included representatives from top American firms such as Goldman Sachs and the Business Roundtable. I mean, this thing is going into all kinds of directions with big firms and cocktail dinners. What's exactly being but you walk into the White House and ask for $2 billion every month.
Yeah.
It just seems like, wait a second, was this part of the agreement going in? Did anybody say, hey, by the way, about 2 months into this war, we're going to hold our own, and then guess what? We're going to want $2 billion a right. month from you.
And they've already admitted they can't tell you where the weapons are ending up that are being taken there, that are being shipped there. And there have been plenty of videos of Russians taking up a lot of those unused weapons, or weapons that can still be used. And it's the same with the money, as you said there. How can we be sure that money is going towards what it needs to in Ukraine?
Shouldn't all this giving need to be approved by Congress? Is this all going to through President Biden with an executive order? That's a text and a question on the text line from Gardner. We'll read some more of your thoughts as well, and you can call 251-343-0106. Dan and Dalton in Mobile Mornings. From Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:53, 7 away from 9 o'clock. Mobile Mornings, of course, 9:05. You'll get Jeff Poore back.
That's correct. He was back yesterday.
Okay, he was there. Okay. Sorry. He had his wisdom teeth taken out or something on Friday.
That's right. And today, Ray Mellick on in the first hour with Jeff. Paul DeMarco, the co-GOP chairman in Jefferson County. Or, I'm sorry, the Jefferson County GOP chairman. And then you look ahead to the third hour, and he talks with a candidate for State House District 64, Angelo Fermo. And looking forward to this one, 11:30, former Governor Robert Bentley. And, say what you want about Governor Bentley and the way he left office and the reason he left office, but he pulled off a huge upset when he actually became governor. So he would and does provide some pretty good insight into what it's like to get
getting elected. Yeah,
campaign trail and get elected.
Yeah. Text line, anything got your attention there?
Well, we were talking to Quinn earlier, and Jay Bird puts up a picture of Dr. Fink from The Simpsons. He said, every time I hear Quinn, hey, that's rude, Jay Bird. And let's see. Haywood says, mental health in the state are under a monopoly. Charles, when you were discussing the money to Ukraine, or at least the money they solicited, he said, oh, hell no. So Charles, not a fan of that. Buford says, Ukraine government has turned this invasion into a money-making scheme. Putin is the best thing that's ever happened to Zelensky. Putin made Zelensky the darling of liberals and turned him and his buddies into billionaires. Meg says, corruption and human trafficking also describes America. You know, and a lot of people have been saying that. And while it's true there is corruption and human trafficking, just it's not to the same extent. It really isn't. And it's terrible. Any human trafficking is awful, and of course there's corruption at the highest levels here, but the human trafficking here, as bad as it is, nowhere near the level that it is in other parts of the world, including Russia and Ukraine. And this last text here, I wonder how many Javelin missiles are now in Shy-Com hands. regarding Ukraine corruption. Yeah, a lot of Javelin missiles are in the hands of the enemy now.
So Zelensky, he made a boo-boo over the weekend. Unscripted remark. He made it known that Blinken and Austin were coming to Kyiv. The Pentagon officials had planned for a number of contingencies, like Zelensky saying the wrong thing, and having details of the secret trip leaked out was among them. So they thought there was a possibility that could happen. So they arrived in Poland. This is fascinating the way they got in there. They get to Poland, Blinken and Austin, early Sunday morning. And they climb into cars, were driven across the border into Ukraine, began an 11-hour train ride to Kyiv.
Oh, great.
Yeah, great is right. They were accompanied by just a few of their staff members, and their location was tracked minute by minute in the U.S. Military Tactical Operations Center in Poland. So anyway, what was it like getting in? Well, try driving across the border and then hopping in a train and being in that train for 11 hours. They had to feel a little bit vulnerable, right?
I wonder if, you know, maybe they did let Russia know, you know, there's some very important Americans traveling through.
Could be.
Is not the time. If you think now is the time to take out Zelensky, if you hit Austin or Blinken or any other American, then, you know, it really escalates quickly.
Yeah, you're right. That could be. And then maybe just as a show of what we could have done yesterday, they were knocking those rails out.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Bombing the train rails.
It's almost like, okay, we didn't, but this is what we could have done.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if that's how that played out.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And also something that, you know, maybe this is just particularly worrisome for me with the young kids, but we talked last week about these strange cases of hepatitis among kids in the U.S. and across the Atlantic.
The U.S. was all in Alabama.
Exactly. That's what was really weird about it, is that the 9 cases were here in Alabama. And all of the kids who had it, I believe, were under 16. For Alabama, I think they were under 10. But now there have been 2 more cases in America, these both coming from North Carolina.
Okay.
And at the time when there were 9 cases in Alabama, I think 2 required liver transplants.
Wow.
And as they look into this and try to figure out exactly, you know, what's causing this hepatitis, they're saying that it is the common cold, one of the common cold viruses. Has somehow they think that's their theory, that one of these common colds is somehow hurting the liver of these children, and they've detected the adenovirus of the 117 cases. 74 have had the adenovirus. 20 were infected with COVID, and 19 of the kids had both COVID and a separate adenovirus. When I brought this up, my wife, the first thing she said was, what about the vaccinations? Because that's been a big topic of discussion at our house. And they haven't. I haven't seen any study where they've said what the vaccination status for these children is. But really disconcerting. And none of them have died. That's good news.
But children in Alabama, your guess would be that they didn't get the, you're talking about the COVID vaccination?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Not many kids
or even just COVID in general. You know, if these kids caught that, whether that played some role in it.
Just the parents I've talked to, I don't have any numbers in front of me, weren't rushing their 5-year-old to go get the vaccine.
Yeah.
You take your kids to a daycare every day, so.
I don't know, but they're still trying to figure this thing out. And not to say that the vaccine or COVID are the reason behind it, but definitely something to look into.
It is 8:59, FM Talk 106.5, and Jeff Ford's on the way next.